And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Each week, Ray spotlights in-depth interviews with legendary and up-and-coming authors and music artists. Ray also features the movers and the shakers of the music and publishing industries and suggests important methods for getting the most out of your public relations and marketing needs. Please welcome music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ray Shasho, broadcasting from BBS Radio, and welcome to the show where we spotlight legendary and up-and-coming music artists and authors. Brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or visit www.publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Keith Thibodeau is the executive director of Ballet Magnificat since 1993. Keith first came to national attention as the drum-playing son of Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz on the now-classic I Love Lucy show. Hailed as a child prodigy, Keith started drumming at the age of two in Lafayette, Louisiana. His abilities led him to a national tour, a starring role as Little Ricky Ricardo, and various acting stints on television, including The Andy Griffith Show, Route 66, the Shirley Temple Playhouse, Hazel, and many more. While attending the University of Louisiana in Lafayette, Keith joined and recorded with the then mainstream rock band David and the Giants. Keith left the group after several years, but following his and fellow band members' Christian conversion, the band regrouped under the same name and went on to become one of the nation's top contemporary Christian music groups. As a drummer, singer, and songwriter for the Dove-nominated David and the Giants, Keith toured extensively for 10 years in the United States, Canada, Jamaica, and England, recording nine albums before leaving the group in 1989 to pursue other interests. Keith has been featured in such publications as Newsweek, People, Saturday Evening Post, Modern Drummer, CCM, and Classic Drummer Magazine. He has also been a guest on NBC's The Today Show, Entertainment Tonight, CBS's Good Morning America, and The O'Reilly Show. In January of 1991, he joined his wife Kathy on the road with Ballet Magnificat, and in 1993, Keith became executive director. In addition to his current responsibilities at Ballet Magnificat, Keith still finds time for the drums and recording. Keith's book, Life After Lucy, tells the story of his life as Little Ricky on the I Love Lucy show and subsequent encounter with Jesus Christ as Savior. Life After Lucy is sold in bookstores and in the gift shop section of his website. Keith and Kathy have one daughter, Tara, who is a dancer and choreographer and married to Bryce Drew, former player in the NBA and head basketball coach at Valparaiso University. Please welcome TV icon, virtuoso drummer, and executive director for Ballet Magnificat, Keith Thibodeau, to the Ray Shasho Show. Welcome, Keith.
Hey, Ray. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on your show, man. By the way, you could pronounce my name. It's like Thomas. It's Thibodeau. It's very, very hard to pronounce. It looks like Thibodex, but it's Thibodeau. Don't worry, though. I get worse. I get these sales calls, and people say, when they say my name wrong, I say, well, you got the wrong house here.
Yeah, they say the same thing about my name, too. But the good thing is your middle name is Raymond, isn't it?
It's good old Raymond, yeah.
See, I knew I liked you.
It's good old Raymond.
Last time we chatted, you were in the airport to participate at the Chill Theater Toy Model and Film Expo in New Jersey. And, I looked it up. What an incredible lineup that show had. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, it was crazy. The first time I actually attended, the fellow, he's from New York, had asked me to do it like four times. And, I had other things going on. And so I finally did it. And it's really a very eclectic bunch of people that get together there. Everybody from Charlene Tilton of Dallas fame to Vinny Appice, a drummer. and just everything in between. They had Leave It to Beaver, Jerry Mathers, and Tony Dow there, myself, Lou Diamond Phillips, who played in La Bamba, you know, the Richie Valens story.
Right.
It's just and then you get on top of that. There's a lot of costumes and stuff like that because it happened to fall on the Halloween weekend, so it was pretty eclectic and pretty unique.
Yeah, on the music side, I saw they had Michael DeBar.
People like Michael DeBar, the original drummer for Alice Cooper, Neil Smith. I mean, real nice guys. I hung out a little bit with Vinny and and him and Neil, and they had. Yeah, I mean, just Melissa Manchester was there. Also Michael Nesmith of the Monkees was there as well.
Yeah, I saw Sherry Curry was there from the Runaways. I interviewed Sherry. She's really cool. And,
is that a music group, the Runaways?
Oh, the Runaways, yeah, Joan Jett.
I don't know if you ever heard of the, the fabulous,
Thunderbird
right now. There's so many people there. It was amazing.
Yep. Yeah. Was there a good crowd? Pretty good crowd.
Yeah. I mean, it was like crazy. Big crowd. It's supposed to be one of the largest of those kinds of events in the nation. I think they have some in Hollywood and Chicago,
right.
But this one in New Jersey, right outside of New York City, is the big one, they say.
Yeah, this was huge. Our radio audience can visit www.chillertheater.com if they want to check out the event, maybe for next year, I guess.
It's held at the Hilton in Parsippany, New Jersey, and it was fun. It was fun to meet everybody and see everybody.
Happy anniversary again. I know I said it earlier, and you're going on how many years now?
Well, my wife and I we celebrated our 41st anniversary.
Congratulations. That's awesome, man. That's hard to say nowadays, isn't it?
It is. It's like 41 years. Wow, man.
Yeah.
It's older than most everybody in the place where we work at today, in the ballet here. So
you guys must be doing something, right?
It's a blessing, you know, that God has, in this day and age when everybody's, you know, gets married and divorced at the drop of a hat, you know.
Exactly.
Or just live together. I mean, it's great to be able to stay with someone for that many years and know that they love you and you love them, you know.
Right. That's what it's all about, you know, to have a lifetime partner that you can spend the rest of your life with. Let's first talk about Ballet Magnificat. I think I was intrigued by it. I went on the website. It's a professional Christian ballet company. It was founded in Mississippi in 1986. You're the director and also your wife, Kathy. In 82, Kathy won the silver medal at the USA International Ballet Competition, which is really cool. Talk a little bit about it. It's an incredible program.
Well, it really did start out, you know, she was just a secular ballet dancer who did quite well, you know, in the secular world. Mikhail Baryshnikov asked her to join his company in New York. And she turned it down because she wanted to be with her family, you know. She began doing this competition, which you mentioned, and won the silver medal. She did, in that piece, she did a Christian piece called We Shall Behold Him. And it was an old Sandy Patty song. And in 1982, it was there was like Chinese communist judges, and at that time, Soviet Union was in power. And so they had a lot of communist people, and people would steer her away from doing this particular Christian dance within the context of what she needed to do with classical and other things,
right.
Because they would judge against her. But she just said, she just stuck to her guns. She said, you know, she had previously gone to Japan and was in a competition there, and it was very political. So she said, you know, I'm just really going to, dance my faith out as well, you know, in this competition. So she did, and she still won a silver medal in the senior division. It there was a special, a PBS special, To Dance for Gold that aired subsequently, and which was very, you know, they were all over the nation. And so it was a very big honor for her. And then from that, Ballet Magnificat, the Christian ballet company, the vision was sort of came out of that. And Kathy started the company with me in 1986. And at the time, I was traveling with my band, David and the Giants.
Right.
But it was, you know, we formed it, and then we started with a couple of dancers, and now it's grown to be two, three, four companies. We have a company in Brazil now and a school in Brazil.
Really? Wow.
We have School of the Arts here in Jackson, Mississippi as well, with two companies that tour internationally and nationally. And so it is amazing, you know, how you know, you could take a simple idea to use dance or ballet for the glory of God, and that's what we did. You know, we're believers, and we really believe in what we do, whether it's music or whether it's dance, and we believe it's biblical to do so, and so we jumped into it.
How proficient do you have to be to enter, like, you know, the Ballet Magnificat? I mean, can you be a beginner, or you got to be, you know, already a proficient dancer?
Well, for the companies, you have to, you know, there are
right.
auditions once
okay.
a year, and
okay.
then once you pass the audition, you would be in our trainee program. We have about 40 trainees that come in from all over the U.S. and the world to train, live, and work here in Jackson for 2 to 3 to 4 years. And then from this group of people, the trainees, we actually pick company people that come into either companies.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to... You have to be ready to go. You have to be kind of, you know, you have to be on a springboard, ready to go. You have to,
right.
you have to have a certain number of years. You have to have a certain proficiency as far as, you know, we're looking for good dancers, and dancers that are believers that want to use their dance for Him, and so that's kind of who we are. You know, they have to be on point. They have to, you know, they have to be good dancers. It's like, I don't know however else I can say that. But and then we train them in our style for 2 to 4 years. Usually it's like 2 years, and they'll move up to the second company in the training
right.
program. And then from that second company, we normally pick if we have openings in the companies, we'll pick from those to go into the company. Or they'll go into other dance companies around the country, or, you know, other things that they're called to do, mission work or whatever,
right.
you know.
Well, it's been described as the premier Christian dance company in the U.S., one of the best out there.
Well, I mean, we're like the oldest, and we're, I guess you could say we're the biggest or largest of what we do. You know, there's nobody that does it on, I guess, the scale that we do it. So
I like the happy video on YouTube. Everybody needs to see that. That's cute.
That's funny. We did that in down the subway in Berlin when we were touring. I know, and then you saw my little act in there. That's funny.
I like
cool.
that. My favorite girl was the one that did the Charlie Brown dance. You know, the girl that did the, you know, bouncing up and down, like the Charlie Brown dance, like one of the girls from Charlie Brown.
Oh, yeah, man, we got a fun group of girls and guys that like to cut up.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah.
How did you first started playing drums? You were like 3 years old, right? And you were pretty much self-taught. Did you listen to records, or how did you, I heard you were playing with spoons and on the table, like when you were little. Is that how it started?
I think just about every drummer that starts early kind of goes through the same thing. You know, they start
right.
on pots and pans, the floor, the, you know, whatever. In my case, it was pots and pans and and the trash cans in the backyard. Those days, you had those old aluminum trash cans.
Yep.
So the neighbor heard me playing in the backyard, and she called and said, or told my mom that, you know, they needed to buy me a set of drums. And because she said, it sounds like he's making rhythm. So they bought me a little toy drum, and then I kind of went through that, and then I asked for a real drum,
mm-hmm.
and my dad bought me a real snare drum. And I used to go, and, you know, he used to take me to parades, and I'd hear drummers in the parades, and I'd listen to the old radio shows, you know, with the big orchestras and jazz bands that
mm-hmm.
that played on the radio at that time, and I guess it was the early 50s. I go way back. But I started when I was about 2 years old.
I told, I had Cindy Blackman Santana, who's a drummer, a great female drummer, and she's Santana now. I talked to her about it. I said, you know, you got to have it in you to become a drummer. I don't think it's something that, you know, somebody can just pick up and play. You know, because my son's that way. He's got since he was little, I'm amazed by the rhythm he's got playing drums. I think it's got to be in you to play good drums at an early age.
I think the same applies to, like, you know, singers too. You know, you can either sing on pitch and sing good, or you don't sing on pitch, and you know, you've seen some people murder that. Well, same thing with the drums. I mean, you have to have it in you, and it's part of, you know, it's part of my makeup. I've always had this sense of rhythm since I've been, you know, a little boy, you know, a little kid, and it is God-given, you know. It's like put in people, in their DNA, you know.
It is God-given. That was a perfect example of comparing the drums with boys, because I do believe that, you know. I people can pick up the guitar, but I don't think they can pick up the drums, you know.
Yeah, I mean, people can play piano. And you know, they may not even have rhythm, but they sort of look at the music and they sort of robotically, you know, just it's like a computer or something trying to play it. But you know, a lot of times you get people that are, you know, classically trained in things such as, you know, the classics and whatever in big orchestras, but they cannot play in a contemporary ensemble, some of them.
Right.
Because they're, or even piano players that are used to playing by themselves, and they don't play in a group. That is another art to itself, is to be able to listen to other people
mm-hmm.
and play off one another, and that's the whole concept of jazz and
yep.
and jamming and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's not easy to jam. You know, I play some guitar and I've been in bands and things like that, but once you get you know, very advanced, and you start getting up there, you know, it gets difficult unless you're playing like progressive rock and you can, you know, you're so good that you're making mistakes and nobody notices, you know.
Well, you know, even when you make mistakes, I mean, that's the whole point. I mean, it comes across as just part of what's going on, you know, because you have the ability to jump back on quickly.
Exactly. We're going to get into David and the Giants. We're going to play a track, which is from, I think, the new album, which is not coming. It's coming. It's a new live album, right? Which you can order now.
I believe so. It's our DVD that you have.
Yeah, the DVD.
CD.
We're going to talk all about that, which is awesome, and how you can buy that and everything. But I got to talk a little bit about Little Ricky.
Absolutely, man.
You know, it's pretty cool that people our age have this, you know, we have to scramble to find any footage of ourselves when we're young on Super 8, Regular 8, remember all that, the movie projector and the screen and all
that?
Oh,
yeah, exactly.
You know? But not you. You can just go to an I Love Lucy episode, and there you are.
Yeah, that's perfect, Ray. I used to think of that myself, and I used to look at the, you know, the good points about that, and I'd say, you know, yeah, I've got instant, really good film of me when I was younger, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And you can show family, and this is what I look like when I was younger, you know? And anybody who hadn't seen an I Love Lucy show, which is not many people at all.
Oh, yeah, I know it.
I had Lucy Arnaz on the show. She's so cool. You know, she's funny, and she's very, very talented. She's a great singer.
She hit it off because my mom, you know, in the theater and vocal performances.
She's excellent. But my mom was Cuban, so we hit it off really well.
Really? I did not know that.
Yeah, so I grew up in a Cuban household. My dad was American, born in New York, but my mom was born in Cuba.
Oh, cool. So, did you know Spanish? Did you learn Spanish?
Un poquito.
Oh, poquito. Okay.
Just like Lucy, you know, Lucy doesn't speak fluent Spanish, but when she talks about a dish, a Cuban dish, she sounds perfect Cuban accent.
Oh, yeah. Her dad was a great cook, man. I used to relish when he'd cook his yellow rice and...
yellow rice and corn and
pork chops. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah.
The bananas. Pork chops. Platanos. Awesome on the grill.
Platanos, platanitos, yuca, all that stuff.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, Desi was a lot. I got a cousin Tony that he passed away was exactly like Desi Arnaz. I mean, the same humor, same everything. You know, Cubans are cool.
They're very cool. Cool people. Very rhythmic people too.
Very much. As a matter of fact, my aunt knew Celia Cruz. They were good friends in Cuba.
That's cool.
Great, cool. Celia Cruz.
Yeah, some of the best ballet dancers. Speaking of ballets, are from Cuba, like Alicia Lanza and you know, some of these performers. I mean, the Cubans really excelled in a lot of things.
Yeah, they got the moves as far as dancing. You know, nobody can beat them.
No, they are.
I gotta say, your favorite episode was the Superman episode. What do you think?
I think so. I think that, I mean, he was my hero. He was really super. When when I first met him, I shook hands with him, looked up to him, of course, I used to watch the old Superman series, and so, yeah, it was a real treat to have him on the show, and that he was actually there, you know. It was really amazing opportunity to see someone. And I, you know, like himself, that is such a legend, you know, and he was Superman, you know. There was, you know, all these other people after him, you know. In my eyes, they're more like pretenders, you know.
Yeah.
And but he genuinely loved kids, and he genuinely was a nice guy, and you know, then you've got the whole thing about his death, and the way he died. My dad told me when he died that he had slipped on a bar of soap, and I could get my head around that. I said, how can Superman just die slipping on a bar of soap? But he didn't want to, you know, upset me with, you know,
possible
suicide type of thing. But
yeah, I don't think they ever really found out the truth, because another thing was that he was murdered, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the whole intrigue about George Reeves, yeah. And people, I used to think he was the brother of Steve Reeves, Hercules. But he's not.
Yeah, you're right. You're right about that. Yeah. Huh. But Superman will always be him. He was the best. I watched all the episodes with him on TV. The reruns are still on every once in a while.
He really encapsulated that whole role in what he did. And, you know, it was a great series.
You know, I also really enjoy the Lucy Desi Comedy Hour. Lucy Arnaz says, you know, it wasn't as big deal as I Love Lucy and everything, but I really liked it. I mean, you had some great guests on the show. I remember Fred McMurray, Milton Berle. You know,
that was a funny one, the Milton Berle show.
Oh, it was hilarious.
There was the Danny Thomas show. That was a funny one too.
Yep.
They had some really. I enjoyed the Marie Chevalier show.
Right.
Got to play drums. Got to sing and dance and that, and that was fun. That was toward the end of the show, and at that point I was just kind of getting to the point where I was really kind of getting used to being, you know, an actor. And I was sort of, you know, embracing the role of that. But then Lucy and Desi divorced, and things went on, and she did the Here's Lucy show, and they remarried, and, you know, things were different, you know.
Yeah, it's a shame that it all worked out that way, because they were like America's favorite couple, you know. You think they were the perfect couple, and, you know, they behind the scenes, they had all this kind of turmoil, I guess.
Yeah, it was, they had a different kind of marriage, and just, you know, Lucy and Desi Jr., the kids, they definitely had a different upbringing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sad in a lot of ways, the way it came about, you know, the way it had to be, you know.
Well, Lucy said they were never around. Lucy Arnaz. You know?
Yeah, it was. It was definitely, you know, almost a compartmentalized kind of deal, you know.
They probably saw you more than they did them.
You're right. I think you're right. Well, I'd spend summers with them in Del Mar and Corona and Beverly Hills and.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I was like another brother, I guess.
I got great stories from Stanley and Barry Livingston from My Three Sons. I interviewed both of them, and I talked to Barry about his book and everything. It's a great book, by the way, Barry Livingston's book about Ernie. But, you know, he was saying that William Frawley, they'd have to go find him. I think he was at the Brown Derby or something, hanging out with his friends while they were shooting. And it was up to them to go get William Frawley out of the bar and bring him back kind of sober if they could.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was definitely a genuine personality, a character kind of a guy, you know.
Yeah.
You know, he was definitely old school, mm-hmm. you know, Brooklyn Dodgers. You know, he was, you know, he was that New York vaudevillian character who was he was really a nice guy. I mean, he was mm-hmm. really pretty affable to me, and even as a little child, you know, he'd say, like, how's the world treating you today, Keith? You know, and you know, we'd meet at the donuts and the coffee area, you know. So and there's always that thing about him and Vivian, you know, having a tense relationship. But but you know, it wasn't like it didn't ever spill over into some, you know, knockdown, drag out fight or anything like that. It was just more underneath the current, you know.
Well, kind of worked for the show in a way, you know.
Of course, yeah. The dynamic. I mean, the writers were brilliant in that they would write in bits of reality in the show.
Yep.
Like when little Ricky gets stage fright.
Yep.
That was part of my makeup, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I did have some of that in me because, you know, originally I was a drummer. I wasn't an actor, so I kind of got thrown into this Hollywood world that it was like, okay, what's this, you know, as a little kid, you know. And I was totally submerged into an adult world. And so it was... The writers were brilliant in that they, you know, even Lucy and Desi's jealousy, you know, they would have Barbara Eden come on, and she would be like, you know, the girl that Desi had the eyes for, you know, and the blonde, and they write these funny scripts around these things, you know.
I like when you were first learning to play drums on the show, and you would play that same beat, boom, boom. Boom, boom, boom. It drove everybody nuts.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, I started playing that beat, you know, and then the drummer for the show would literally have to play that beat through the whole show.
I'm
talking about the guy who was in the Ricky Ricardo Orchestra, the Desi Arnaz
Orchestra. Oh, okay, yeah. That was funny,
He was from Cuba. The whole band was almost all from Cuba.
Really? Yeah, I could see that. They look Cuban.
Yeah, they were real. Yeah. They were the real deal, you know, the real Latin deal. spoke Spanish, and I mean, they were cool.
So you're part Cuban then, automatically.
Well, you know, I've kind of got that in my makeup around here.
Exactly. You know what's cool? Some of the tidbits I learned. You know, I interviewed John Sebastian from the Love and Spoonful. His godmother was Vivian Vance. You know.
Oh yeah, yeah. I forgot about that.
Bassist Billy Sherwood of Yes. His godfather was Milton Berle. His dad was Bobby Sherwood, who was a big band leader back in the day.
Oh my God!
It's funny how you find all these connections. You know.
Didn't know that. Yeah. I mean, I did kind of know that about the Love and Spoonful, but I forgot about it.
Yeah, it's pretty cool how it's all connected, you know, all the, all the people. You know, I was a big fan of Sheldon Leonard, too, who was...
Oh, he was... In fact, he was there when I first came on the set, when I auditioned for the part. He was one of the guys, he was producing, he was a big producer, and he came over and listened to me playing the drums on the set when I was auditioning for the show. And... you know, along with Desi and all the crew members and everything coming around watching this little kid play drums, you know.
And then Desi was cool. Finally, he was a good actor, too.
Yeah, oh, he was great, you know. But after I played the drums, Desi stood up and laughed and said, well, I guess we found little Ricky. And so I was signed to a 7-year contract with...
You were the perfect little Ricky. I mean, you look like Desi.
Oh, yeah, at the time. And then the fact that I played the drums, I don't think they actually, you know, expected a child to play drums.
Right.
So that was a perfect tie-in to all their musical, you know, acts and things they did on the show, songs and dances that they did on the show. They could always incorporate me on when they did them, you know.
Yeah, that was a big plus. Do you ever have the urge to just play Babaloo?
No, I'm just never. Ever since I found out that Babaloo was a voodoo god from the Cuban Santeria religion,
right.
I said, well, you know, I don't really want to do all that. You know? Who wants
That's
to
funny.
Do all that? I don't know. Not me.
That's funny. Speaking of the dark side, did you witness any of the Hollywood dark side when you were a kid? Because you always hear stuff, you know, the pedophilia and all that, you know, stuff.
well,
you know, Jay North, you know, from Dennis and Menace, hated the show because they kept him there like a prisoner, and he would actually have family members hit him if he didn't do the right thing. So he was really tormented during that show.
Yeah, there's some sad stories. I mean, Rusty Hamer from the Danny Thomas Show,
he's
another one, ended up finally committing suicide. But, you know, it's a different life that you have to, you know, and there were things like I got hypnotized in my dressing room, you know, with the classic, you know, watch on a chain going back and forth, and my mother and dad were not to ask me what went on in the dressing room with the man, and but I do distinctly remember that, and I think they tried at that point, I think it was to help me memorize lines or help me not stutter. I'm not really quite sure, but it was just one of those things that pop up in your memory. When my mother asked me what he did, it kind of jolted my memory. You know.
Did it work?
I guess so, because I was on till they ended the show. So.
Yeah, you know, I actually saw you stutter once. You were on the Dinah Shore show.
Exactly.
You stuttered on that. I saw that on YouTube. You
exactly.
Know? Yeah.
Yeah.
I met Dinah Shore a long time ago. I had a business in D.C. My family grew up with retail electronics stores in Washington, D.C., right on F Street. So we used to get a lot of celebrities then, and Dinah Shore came in once when she was dating Burt Reynolds. Pretty cool lady. She looked great. She was already mid to late 70s, and she was all dressed.
She was. She was very, very nice looking.
Very attractive.
Nice lady. And we were on her show. Desi and I, and then Desi Senior was on the show, as well as Lucy, I believe. But it was after the Out of Lucy show, so it was an interesting little thing we did.
Yeah, you did. It was like a big band sound or something, right? You had a little band there.
But yeah, I enjoyed playing. You know, we had our little Ricky band or whatever it was,
mm-hmm.
and so
you guys are good.
Then the big band came in behind us, and it was like, wow, this is cool, man. We got these big horn section coming in, you know. It was so cool.
Well, we're going to talk about David and the Giants now. David and the Giants was a great band. Still going on. You got the brothers, David. You got the twins, right? Claiborne and Rayborne.
Exactly, yeah. Claiborne and Rayborne.
Both of them are twins. And the band was kind of formed. And there's another brother, right, Lance? That's another.
Lance actually is David's son who played after I did. After I left in 1989, Lance took over for some of the 90s, and now I'm back with him as the band now.
Well, you're the original drummer, pretty much, right?
Yeah, I'm the original drummer as far as.
Well, you came in 69, and that's when things started. You know, I think you guys were at your height, commercial-wise, in the 80s, right? Wasn't that your, like, biggest period?
Yeah, we cut 9 albums in the 80s, and, that was our decade that we really, got out there and toured and played and did a lot of festivals and concerts across the nation. And actually, England and Jamaica as well, which are really fun to do.
You guys were pretty big in England.
Yeah, they had a Northern Soul sound, which was a particular kind of genre of music that kind of hit it big in the UK.
Right.
And there was a lot of different artists that kind of fell into that category, and we had a couple of songs, 10 Miles High and Super Love, I think, mm-hmm. that were. I think it was Capitol Records that did those, or Crazy Horse, but some of that stuff was all of it was connected with Muscle Shoals.
Oh yeah, the famous Muscle Shoals. Yeah.
And the Muscle Shoals sound people, yeah. The horns.
David and the Giants. You guys performed in concert with Styx, Black Oak Arkansas, Cheech and Chong, Chuck Berry. And an interesting thing was David was in the studio with the Rolling Stones for Brown Sugar.
Yeah, I mean, he was there, met Mick Jagger and everyone, and was there when Rod Stewart was in the studio as well, and got to hang out with him and just be there during the recording, you know, so it was kind of cool.
That is pretty cool. You know, it's weird. It's amazing because the band started like in the early '60s, during the you had the British invasion going on at the time, and then even when you joined in '69, I mean that's when all the FM rock bands were hitting. You know, the Zeppelins and Black Sabbaths and things like that. Mm-hmm. So you guys had to compete with all that as well.
I actually met David and them when I was 16.
Really,
I was playing. They were playing in a club in Biloxi, Mississippi, called the Vapors Club, which had artists like Jimi Hendrix and who was the backup guitar player for Little Richard and the Allman Brothers, who were known at that point as Allman Joy. It was like sort of like they had a place, another place down there called Gus Stevens, which had people like it was like a big kind of like a getaway for people in New Orleans, the mafia and people like that would be around there. But that's when I met him, when I was 16. And I sat in with David and them, who were the club band there, and the manager asked David if I could sit in because my band, I was sort of, auditioning for my band to play there. Mm-hmm. And I played with David, and it was like, I was like this little 16-year-old kid, and they, you know, I don't even know what I was doing in that club that young, but that was the first time I had met David, and they couldn't believe like this little kid could play that good, you know.
You know, everyone needs to go on YouTube and punch up "Highway to Heaven," because you have a great drum solo from 1988 that everybody can, you know, kind of check out your skills, because you're an excellent drummer. You know,
well, I appreciate it, but I've played better. thanks, man. I appreciate it. Thank you.
And you know, David's got a great voice, man. He really does.
He has a great voice. He's a great guitar player and great songwriter. And we wrote a lot of songs together. But David is really a prolific writer and mm-hmm. and has really really kept at it all these years. You know, whereas I kind of did my own thing for a couple of years and. I played with a band called Lively Stones when I first left David and them, and the guitar player for the Newsboys, which is a pretty famous Christian band,
sure.
as well as the keyboard player for Petra. Mm-hmm. They played with me before they were in those bands, but David has kept at it, and he's got a studio. He's got a Neve recording console that. Is just a classic that people come from Nashville to check out and mm-hmm. say, wow, you got a need? That's cool, man.
You know, one of his songs I love is Here's My Heart. I mean, that you know, really showcases
yeah.
the voice on that. Yeah, that's
yeah
great
Here's
tune.
My Heart is a song that somebody had mistaken for another group. In Ohio, and it got on secular radio, and people played it, or this radio station played it, and all of a sudden it became kind of like this flash hit, and it was on like the top 100, you know.
Yep.
In the nation. It wasn't even on Christian stations. You know, it was on regular FM stations and AM stations.
It was you in 77 that converted the band into a Christian band. Is that true?
Well, no, it was 74 that I became a Christian, and then I witnessed to the band and told David, I said, you know, we could play the same music, David. I said, but, you know, let's change the lyrics of the song to make them
right.
more godly. And,
right.
You know, they thought I flipped out on some kind of drug, and... But this was back in 74, and David did write a song called Glory Hallelujah, which we have revamped. But I guess he did it just to kind of quiet me down from all my witnessing that I did to him. But I left the band, and then they came into the faith of the Lord Jesus, and we became a Christian band in 1979 with me playing the drums. They had actually started in 77 without a drummer, and they ended up first going to like a black church in Laurel, Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just hanging out in this black church, you know, just a bunch of hippies, you know. And but God had another plan, and so I'd gotten married to Kathy in the meantime. We had gone off to California, and I rehearsed with Starbuck, that pop band that had the Moonlight Feels Right for about two
yeah.
weeks in Atlanta, Georgia.
They wanted
and,
you to go in the
got
band.
Got fired from that job, and I told Kathy, I said, my wife, who I just married, I said, you know, well, I said, I said, this is the very best thing that could ever happen to us. And it really was, because after that I joined David and the Giants, because David had been asking me to join the band. He said, you know, we're Christians now, and we're playing, you know, in different churches and different places, you know, across the country. So we'd love to ask you to join the band.
That's amazing. It's amazing how everybody, you know, all of a sudden, you know, was had the faith, you know, the whole band at that time.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a movement. You know, we kind of came in in on the Jesus movement back in the late 60s, early 70s.
Right.
So that was part of the makeup then. And
yeah.
We went all over the nation. We did revivals. We did whatever we needed to do. You know, we were in Oxford, England, playing for punk rockers. And, I mean, they would, you know, we would play this rock, you know, in these tent crusades in Oxford, England. And these guys, these teen punk rockers would come in. They loved the music, but then they heard the words, and then they would get mad. They would, you know, they would curse. They would throw rocks. They threw rocks at our microphones, knocked them down, threatened to burn the tent down. Then we kept on playing. We were there for like, you know, several days, and we just kept on doing it. We felt like we were being like persecuted, you know, which we were. But we kept on playing, and one of the guys actually became a Christian, and he actually sort of kind of started a fire with the other guys, and we ended up baptizing them in the river, in the Thames River, with their motorcycle lights, you know, on the river at night, and they actually had tears in their eyes when we left. So we had crazy opportunities like that, you know, where we just, you know, just really, you know, was really playing our faith out, you know, playing our faith out through our music.
You know, it's amazing how progressive and advanced Christian music has gotten. You know, it really changed over the years, and I love it. You know, I'm friends with Barry Winslow from, you remember from the Royal Guardsman, Snoopy versus the Red Baron?
Oh, yeah.
Remember that song?
Yeah.
He's the singer from that. And he's Christian. He's got a great album out. Lou Gramm from Foreigner, also with a Christian album. You know, a Christian album with God's message sounding like Foreigner. I mean, just imagine.
Wow!
How cool is that?
That is,
you know?
Cool. That's very cool.
Yeah, and that's what you guys do. You guys had, I think, when you guys converted the band, it was, one of your big hits, you had Noah, right? Noah was, a lot of people really identified with that song, didn't they?
Yeah, that was a song that really impacted a lot of people, and you know, it's kind of a dramatic song, and David would have this dramatic spot in the song where he, you know, sort of cried out, you know, to God, and save him, you know, and deliver him, you know, and, you know, yeah, it was just very dramatic, and a lot of people were they got impacted by that song.
Great tune. You know, Always On My Mind was a big hit, right? That was from Distant Journey. That was back in 1990,
so, yeah. I think. I believe so, yeah.
I remember hearing that on the radio. That was a pretty huge hit.
Nice song, yeah.
You guys have a, you were honored in 2017 this year. Among other Mississippi musicians and songwriters, such as Steve Forbert, for the Jimmy Rogers Music Foundation, right, in Meridian?
Yeah, we had a little event that we were invited to go to, and we got honored with an award for our musical contributions to, you know, the state of Mississippi, and along with Steve Forbert and some other people, and like Dr. Hook and the Medicine Show, some of these guys that played in these bands, and songwriters, George Solo and Jimmy Rogers, even Hartley Peavy of Peavy Corporation,
PBM,
there and was honored as well. And so we played a couple songs, and you know, it was like a small concert type of thing where other people played and we played, and it was an honor, yeah.
Well, we're going to try to get a track in for you. David and the Giants have a live concert CD-DVD recorded in St. Louis, I believe, in August of this year, celebrating 40 years of David and the Giants. It's a 40th anniversary live DVD CD recorded with the original band. We're going to, I think what I understand, all proceeds will go to the David and the Giants Mission Fund. Is that true?
Yeah, all the proceeds go to our mission fund, which we, you know, we've been asked to go to places like the Philippines and other places, and it's just a way to help us, in that way.
And you can visit www.davidwhuff.com, and that's to you can pre-order your copy now. And what I'd like to do is we want to play a track. Riders in the Sky will be on that album, correct?
Yes, that will be on the album. We've done so many things lately. I'm trying to figure out how to do it. That will be on the album.
You do have your hands full. I can tell you that. We're going to go ahead and quickly play Riders in the Sky, okay?
Okay,
and then,
man.
We'll return after that. Okay, Doug, are you there? Well, that was a clip from the new album that's coming out that you can pre-order, David and the Giants, live concert CD DVD recorded in St. Louis. this year, celebrating 40 years of David and the Giants. Keith, I've got five different music sites that I will be putting a lot of your new music on as well, so people can get. And I'm also going to put this interview on YouTube, so they'll get plenty taste of this new music, which is going to be awesome. It's a great song, great album. I can't wait for it. I want to go ahead and pre-order mine as soon as I can. Do you have anything else to add? I know you have a autobiography, Life After Lucy, which was published in 1994. People can go on Amazon and buy that and read your incredible story.
If they want to delve a little deeper into some of that stuff, yeah, they can go to Amazon and check it out. It's called Life After Lucy, and it's got stuff, behind-the-scenes stuff that you know, I was a part of and did, and just my life, you know, and how really I found true life, and that there's life after Lucy, you know. True life is that Jesus Christ came into my life.
Well, you're a success story from, you know, being a child actor. So we don't hear as many success stories. I know Richie Cunningham.
Talking about Ron Howard?
Roddy Howard. Yeah, he's another success story who made it big. You guys.
And you know, I was on the Andy Griffith Show too.
I do know that. You were what, Johnny Paul?
I was Johnny Paul.
Right?
Yeah, that was another.
I remember seeing you on those shows too. Yeah, Ronnie made it big. But it's great to hear the success stories and not all the negativity. You know. And
well, it's only by God's grace, Ray, for sure, for me.
Amen, brother. Amen. Another guy you should be talking to is Mark Farner from Grand Funk. He's also a Christian, you know.
Yeah, I love Mark Farner. I loved the band. I loved what was the name of the band again?
Grand Funk Railroad. Yeah.
What was the name of his band?
Whose band? Mark's?
Yeah.
Yeah, Grand Funk Railroad, and then
yeah, he played with Grand Funk. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I've got
good,
to
good guy,
good,
real good guy.
I have a senior moment here.
That's all right. You're allowed. You've been through a lot.
Yeah. But that's great. I'm glad he's a believer. Yeah, that's great.
He's a believer. Keith, thank you so much, man, for being on the show today. Please keep in touch.
Yeah, man, I enjoyed it. My pleasure, and I love your format, and I was just amazed at how many people you have interviewed, and what a tremendous show you have.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And we're hoping for Dave and the Giants States, more shows coming up in the States. I know you guys are going to Europe, right?
I'm not sure about that, but we've been asked to go.
Right.
Look for us in Florida, though. We may come to
Good.
Florida.
If I can help you in any way with any of the venues down my way, just let me know, okay?
That sounds great, Ray.
All right, Keith. Take care, man.
All right. Blessings, man. Thanks.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is Ballet Magnificat at www.balletmagnificat.com. You can purchase Life After Lucy, the true story of Keith Thibodeau, I Love Lucy's little Ricky, who at the age of 5 was chosen to star in the much-loved TV series. Keith reveals his life with Lucy, Desi, and their family, his struggles with fame, insecurity, drugs, and rock and roll, and how he found a new beginning in Jesus, an inspirational book available now at Amazon.com. David and the Giants, 40th Anniversary, live DVD, CD, recorded with the original band. You can order that, pre-order that right now. Visit www.davidwhuf.com to pre-order your copy today. Very special thanks to Doug and Don Newsome with VBS Radio for making it all happen every show. Join me bi-weekly at our new time and date. Bi-weekly is Wednesday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on The Ray Shasho Show. If you have comments or suggestions or would like to be a guest on The Ray Shasho Show, email us at raypublicityworksagency.com. Don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and Their Wacky Family Business, or the second edition entitled Wacky Shenanigans on F Street, Proud to Be Politically Incorrect in Washington, D.C., available now at Amazon.com. You'll live it. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Join Ray Shasho every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on PBS Radio, Station 1.